Welcome to our Lead to Succeed podcast, where we share leadership and business growth insights, both from our own experiences and that of our guests. We're the hosts. I'm Rebecca Jenkins, founder of RGen, helping companies to grow by finding, gaining and growing the best clients.
And I'm Callum, sharing my perspectives from both being an entrepreneur and working in a variety of different companies. Whether you lead a team or a business, you'll find practical tips, inspirational insights and ideas as we discuss a wide range of leadership topics. So with that, here's today's episode.
Welcome back, listeners. Thank you very much for joining us again for this very special episode with Joshua Friedman. Let me introduce him to you. Joshua Friedman is one of the world's leading emotional intelligence researchers and the co-founder and CEO of 6 Seconds. And that's a global nonprofit business dedicated to teaching people how to use emotional intelligence to improve decision-making, performance, relationships, and quality of life. Now, who doesn't want some of that? He owns the EQ Network Group on LinkedIn, which I am a member of, and you have 135. It's probably gone up since this, but
we're up to 180 now.
180 active members. So well done. It just shows how much interest there is in emotional intelligence and how to apply it and how to use the principles of it to make a difference. Joshua leads the world's largest study of emotional intelligence with breaking research coming through. We might touch on that as we go through the podcast. And Joshua is also a prolific author of many emotional intelligence books, including the best-selling, and it's At the Heart of Leadership, How to Get Results with Emotional Intelligence. I am very excited, really looking forward to getting into this subject, Joshua.
And just to thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, I'm just going to set the scene a little bit here because we, as a family, about a year ago, we all took an emotional intelligence test to see where we all sit as a family. And we also took an IQ test. And I will tell you that we rib each other about this quite a bit. And my daughter won the IQ test and I won the EQ test. But they don't believe the results. So great to have you with us, Joshua. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's kick off. I'd love to get your perspective on what you think makes a great leader today with all the challenges that leaders are facing.
Years ago, I was at a conference with one of my advisors named Todd Everett. And the speaker was saying, well, as a leader, you have to be able to answer the questions. And I wrote on my cocktail napkin, isn't the leader the one who asks the questions? And Todd wrote back, the leader is the one who brings people together to get the questions asked and answered. And that has stuck with me for 20 years, that leadership is mostly about context setting. It's mostly about who you are being and less about what you're doing. And I think this is itself a pretty radical notion. I think we get very caught up in doing, especially those of us who are entrepreneurs, those of us who are founders, those of us who are running, particularly in smaller businesses, there's just so much to do. And of course, we're the ones who know how to do all the things. And so we do. And there's not a lot of being, and it's that old song, doobie doobie doo, right?
Yeah.
So for me, leader, the word leader is a title. Leadership is a set of attributes. And I think everybody can develop and strengthen that set of attributes, whether they are in the formal role of leader or not. I know a lot of people who have leader titles who are pretty weak in leadership. And I know some 6-year-old kids who have a lot of leadership. So I'm very interested in this idea of leadership. What does it take to set that context and be a person who grows trust, be a person who brings out more from people than they would bring out from themselves, who by the way you engage with people, there's a clarity of purpose. You don't set direction. You clarify and elicit that direction. You invite that. You don't make the team work together. You hold a space that brings people together. And I think the last piece is, it is important that work gets done, and it's important that the right work gets done. And so central, I believe, in leadership is about supporting the feedback and clarity, the conversation and learning that helps people pay attention to what has to get done now together to move in alignment with that direction. And so it's bringing these different pieces together that is where the real art is. There are a lot of people who are good at one or two of those, but when those five things come together, we have something really powerful.
How does emotional intelligence play into that, Joshua? How do we bring that to the table to make those things happen that you've just talked about?
Well, let's go to why we don't do some of those things. So, for example, I think it's pretty easy for most leaders to say, yeah, trust would be important. It'd be important that we have trust within our team. It certainly would be important that we have trust with our customers. And yet, how many of us really think about the fact that trust is an emotion? It's one of the basic human emotions, and it's a signal about safety. It's a signal about who's got my back. It's a signal about the strength of a relationship. And yet in our day-to-day work, when we're doing all that doing, we, I think, often skip over some very basic things in our relationships with employees and customers and colleagues and vendors and spouses and children and neighbors that would allow us to actually engender more trust. And we skip those over because we're not tuning in. We're not noticing quickly enough there's an opportunity here. Or quickly enough, I'm messing this up. And the way we notice that is by using our intelligence, but it's a particular form of intelligence. So intelligence means accurately getting data and then effectively using that data to solve problems. So we use our mathematical intelligence to get the budget sorted, and we go, wait, that number's not right. Like, well, how did you know that number wasn't right? Well, because you have mathematical intelligence and you have the business intelligence and the savvy to kind of pick up that clue. And then how did you figure out what the right number was? Well, again, you used your intelligence to sort it out. Do the exact same thing in that relationship. You have this moment where you have this conversation going on, you have this meeting going on, and there's a little expression on somebody's face saying, you're really not being a great leader in this moment. And do you pick up that clue as quickly as you picked up the wrong number in your budget? And I think for a lot of us, certainly for me, the answer is no. I've spent so much time and energy learning how to do the doing things and learning how to do the number things and learning how to do the business process things. But I haven't spent nearly as much time, well, before I started doing this work, as really seeing those emotional clues and then solving those emotional puzzles.
Well, I'm very intrigued to find out how you recognize this in yourself, Joshua, and how you started to explore it. You must have had a moment of self-awareness.
I think, Rebecca, honestly, I had multiple boots to the head moments. Okay. I wasn't a quick study, I'm afraid. And it took me quite a long time to realize I was bad at this. I don't know. I wasn't always bad at it, but I was frequently bad at it. And there was one experience that really stands out for me, which is I was a teacher for a while. And it was, interestingly, I teached a school where emotional intelligence was really central. Before there was such a thing as emotional intelligence, it was central. Back in the day, it was called confluent education, the flowing together of the cognitive domain and the affective domain, as it was called in the 70s. Anyway, this school had a very strong focus on emotional development. And in fact, Dan Goleman came and visited the school and wrote about it as one of the two models he'd found in the world of how you actually teach emotional intelligence. And that's kind of what indirectly gave rise to the start of 6 Seconds back in 1997. So I was teaching, and I don't know if any of you all listening have had the experience of being a teacher, but it is completely overwhelming. It's like, it's even more overwhelming than running a business. And, you know, you have these young people who, like, are lots of challenges going on. I'll just leave it at that. And I went to my principal, who is the now president of 6 Seconds, and almost 40 years later, I'm still working with. So, and I said to her, Annabelle, I think I might be, I don't know, a little bit depressed. Now, I don't know how it is in the UK or wherever you're listening from. And Rebecca, I imagine, you know, when somebody comes to you and says that, like, you're, quote, supposed to say, oh, don't worry, you're fine, right?
Yeah.
And what Annabelle said was, well, it sounds like you have a lot of good reasons for feeling depressed. Why don't you let yourself just feel that for a while and see what happens? And this was stunning to me. And I walked out of her office going, all right, I can feel depressed. Oh, this is great. I get to feel depressed. Oh, how wonderful. And it was interesting how just that recognition of my complex, difficult feelings and acceptance of that and space for that immediately created this profound transformation for me. And I just got super curious about that moment. And that, as much as anything, led me into doing this work.
And was that transformation the acceptance of it, and that helped you to come through that situation, that depression?
I think a lot of us fight against our own emotions. And I remember even years later, having studied emotions, I remember when my dad died and I was angry. And, you know, anybody who's done even the most basic research on grief knows that anger is part of the process of grief. But I started feeling angry. And I remember this moment of saying to myself, I shouldn't be mad at him. He's dead. You know, and then I'm like, wait, what? Stop. Like, what are you doing? This should. As soon as we start doing that, we move into this kind of war with ourselves. And I think when we're in that place, it's the opposite of self-acceptance. And by the way, with our spouses, our colleagues, our children, friends, we do this all the time, you know, like, oh, Rebecca, don't be sad. Oh, Rebecca, don't be mad. Oh, Rebecca, don't be, right? And this invalidation is so normalized. And then we go into this struggle. Well, I feel this, but I shouldn't feel this. And now we have feelings about our feelings. And it just becomes this cluster thing. And And then it takes tremendous, way more emotional intelligence than I had to sort that out. But if we can simplify it and go, okay, I'm feeling this. That's okay. How interesting. I wonder what this is about. Now we've removed this major obstacle and we're able to actually kind of encounter this emotional experience and just think about it and tune into it and make sense of it. And by the way, even giving it a name. And I was scared to give it a name because, I mean, I think it's still, there's so much stigma around this, but certainly back then the word depression was very alarming. And I was scared to say that. And then just having her so matter-of-factly just be like, oh, okay. So there's, I think, a lot of layers to that, but I would say in simple terms, it's about moving out of resistance, out of fighting with ourselves, out of rejecting these parts of ourselves and each other, and into a place of inquiry and curiosity. And it again, to go back to my math example, if you get in yourself into a big fit about the fact that this number's wrong, it's going to become very difficult to figure out what the right number is, right? And you can do all the shouting and stomping that you want. It's not going to fix the number. And so most of us have learned when something doesn't add up, when, you know, we're reconciling our books or whatever it is, we don't have a big come apart about it. We just go, oh, okay, there's something wrong. Let me find it. And that attitude of let me figure this out, that's what I want to have about my own and others' emotions. And that's what I hope I can share.
How do you suggest that leaders might tackle things this way and how they might spot that in their teams? So it's okay for their teams to talk about it. What? And if I say practical steps, I'm talking about doing, and I'm conscious of what you've just said. Maybe you don't want to go into doing, but yeah, how can leaders take this on board? What can they do? How can they help others in this respect and also accept it for themselves? What do you recommend?
The first step is to shift our own attitude about emotions. And I think we've almost all of us grew up with the story of leave emotions out of it. This is business. And I think that's the stupidest advice I've ever heard. Business is fundamentally a relational human process. Leadership is relational. You don't get to be a leader unless you're working with other people. That's inherent in the definition. Right? Like, I'm on this mountaintop all by myself and I'm leading. Okay, you know, you go ahead. One of my colleagues from FedEx said, what do you call a leader with no followers? A guy going for a walk. Right? So there's something implicit in this word leader that involves other people. It's a relational process, it's a people business. And emotions are central to how people work. So as you start rethinking emotion to say, okay, what if feelings are not just a kind of noise or peripheral or something to leave out, but actually invaluable signals of the quality of my business, of the quality of my customer relationships, my employee relationships, our focus, our adaptability, our go-to-market strategy, our culture. Our norms and values are all built around emotion. And emotion, instead of being this sort of noise, is actually valuable data. Once you build that awareness, and actually we literally build business cases for companies around this, and we don't typically do this with small businesses, but if any of you are running a bigger business and you're like, yeah, let's look at the ROI of emotion in our company, we can do that with you. And we can show you where you are wasting money and where you can grow your engagement and your customer engagement. And those are emotional things. And we can actually figure out how much it's worth. Once we shift that orientation to say, this is valuable for us, everything will start to change in your own relationship with emotions. That said, we do have a three-step process for those who are interested in the how do I do it. Step one is noticing the feelings. And in, you know, the stories that I've told so far, that's what's my experience in those stories, is this moment of going, oh, I'm feeling something. Wonder what that is. Should I keep going?
Step two.
I was waiting. I was hoping you were going to ask for step two. Yeah. So we use, we put them in a circle. And I happen to have a sticker here of the model. The three steps, and in the middle, the three steps are know, choose, and give. We often in business talk about being self-aware, having self-awareness, self-management, and self-direction of these three steps. But the main thing I would want to highlight is that we put them in a circle. And in other words, we're not just going to do these three steps once. We're going to keep doing them. The first step is blue, that tuning in like a reflecting pool of water. The second step is red, which is for stop. And we are on autopilot, I don't know, 95% of the day. And we're reacting and we're going, and our brains love that. Our brains are great at putting us on autopilot. It's super efficient. Our brains are pattern making, pattern following machines. And it's part of our basic survival function. And if we had to think about every decision in every situation, we would never make it through the day. So our brains just go, okay, got it. I got it. Got it. I'll do that. Let's just follow this. Don't think. Don't waste energy on this. And so we just go in these unconscious reactions. And that's great, except when we want to make a change. Right? Or when the world is changing.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's like, wait, that old process is going to get me my old results. So step one, notice. Step two, stop. And consider, are there any other options? And my experience is there are always other options. And when I look at the moments in my life when I'm really screwing this up, it's I forget and I have this kind of sense of, well, there's no choice. I just have to do this. Yeah. I just have to press on. I just have to get through. I just have to solve this. I just have to. And when I'm in that mode, I'm kind of emotionally idiotic. And if I'm going to be more emotionally intelligent, that stop to say, wait, I don't need to be on autopilot. There are other options. And then the last step is green for go. Once I've done that, stopping and looking, now what's important? And the green area is about connecting beyond yourself. That self direction. Where do I really want to go? And how do I take one step towards it right now? And then do it again. It's a circle. Just keep going. But that's it. Be more aware, more intentional, more purposeful. Lather, rinse, repeat.
So thank you for sharing that, Joshua. Let's say we've got a very hectic business owner listening to this and they're on that autopilot. They've got so many things to get through during the day. I'm sure we can all relate to this. Things that have to be done, deadlines that have to be met, people they need to talk to. And are you suggesting that process of being aware and stopping and sort of reflecting and thinking is something that occurs during the day, that you carve out time to do that on a regular basis every day? How do we apply this?
Well, yes, and remember the organization I lead is called 6 Seconds.
Yes.
Not 6 hours.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm sorry, I do not care how busy you are, you have 6 seconds. Right. And I work with, you know, military officers and doctors and police officers and people who are truly don't have any time and teachers, you know, and leaders in very complicated situations. And if they can find these moments, I can find these moments and you can find these moments. So there's an illusion of urgency And we all get caught up in that. I have a written on my whiteboard, a big box right there that says the tyranny of urgency. Because I totally relate to this person that you're talking about, Rebecca, as a CEO of a, you know, small nonprofit. I totally relate to that sense of there are 7 million things that have to get done today.
Yeah.
And yet, actually, there are only 7 that have to get done today.
So it's the 6 second, that's how long it should take to just stop, pause, reflect, and then move forward.
Yeah, with practice. I mean, the first few times it's going to take longer, but the reason is the neurobiology of emotion. So emotions are chemicals, and they're in our brains and bodies, and literally the chemicals that we experience as worry, rage, joy, wonder, awe, fear, those chemicals each have a unique shape and structure. They affect every living cell in the human body. They're part of our regulatory system. Even if you're that, like, very, you know, stiff upper lipped, no, we're just going to leave emotions out of it. They're there. They're working. They're operating in the background as part of your basic biology. They're part of how you survive and thrive. So each of these chemicals literally lasts from about 4 to 6 seconds in your body. And so we called our organization 6 Seconds because this research from an amazing neurobiologist named Candace Pert about the way emotions work in our bodies and how they're part of our regulatory system.
And do our thoughts generate our feelings? Thoughts become feelings?
Yes, and. So anybody who's been to talk therapy has learned a little bit about this. Cognitive behavioral therapy is a very, very common approach in both clinical therapy and in kind of self-help circles. And the premise here is that our thoughts create our feelings, create our actions. And of course, that's true. You know, if I think, you know, I have this employee who isn't showing up and, you know, not following through on their commitments, I feel irritated, and then I send them a nasty email. Thoughts create feelings, create actions. But the big breakthrough in emotional intelligence is the recognition that feelings all by themselves are part of our intelligence. They're part of our decision making. Feelings shape our thoughts. Feelings shape our actions. So what we do is we put it into a triangle. And we look at the dynamic relationship between feelings, thoughts, and actions. And sometimes we can pay attention to the feelings first, or the actions first, or the thoughts first, but really seeing how all of those are working on each other. And by the way, your actions today, you know, what you eat, whether you go for a walk, whether you take time to go to church, synagogue, mosque, temple, whether you take time to, you know, have that reflection, that's also going to change your emotional set point tomorrow. So emotions are an automatic physiological reaction, but we are the ones who are setting up the conditions of that system. And so what we set up for ourselves and for our employees changes those automatic reactions. And you think about it from a customer employee context, you know, how do you want that employee to interact with that customer? Well, in part, that's going to be driven by the employee's feelings. And in part, that's going to be driven by the conversation you have with that employee today. It's going to change how they show up with that customer tomorrow. So you're kind of programming this system. And as a leader, you have tremendous influence and authority to set up the emotional conditions for yourself and others to kind of make this run. And that's what we call culture.
Exactly. That's what we call culture and the importance of creating that culture and thinking about how we want our teams to behave, to feel. What I'm getting from this conversation is the importance of thinking about how you want your team, how you want your customers to feel, and that we should perhaps be bringing that more into focus than some of the other things that we might tend to focus on in a business?
We spend a lot of time thinking about what we want people to do. Right? I want you to say this. I want you to ask this. I want you to, you know, stock this shelf. I want you to, you know, send this email. Those are all behaviors. And the question is, well, what's going to drive those behaviors? It's a tiny story. I was working with a Sheraton hotel in Orlando, Florida. And they're in a place called Studio City, Florida. And so they had this thing where they wanted every employee to greet guests, "Welcome to Sheraton Studio City, where everyone is a star." And the employees did it. And you would call the front desk and they would say, "Welcome to Sheraton Studio, where everyone is a star, I can help you." Right? The behavior was there.
Yeah.
But the emotional impact was crap.
Yeah.
Right? Because they had focused on the behavior, not on the driver of behavior. So at 6 seconds, we say emotions drive people, people drive performance. And if you buy that logic, then your job as a leader is all about setting up those emotional conditions that are going to drive the results that you want.
I have to say, I absolutely love that. I think it's a great way to be thinking about how you want people to feel, how you use that to influence behaviors. An example you just gave, I think we can all relate to those phone calls where they have to say so many things and it's just said so quickly and there's no emotion to it at all. So a great example there. Now, I think let's just assume that we're kind of challenging the thought processes of people who may be listening to this, who may not have heard of this as an approach or may be so much in that doing, which, you know, we've referenced. And you've given us the three-step process to apply. How quickly could somebody do this? Would you say after listening to this podcast, you could actually go and do this for 60 seconds, 6 seconds?
Yes. Do it 10 times for 6 seconds each. It's good news, bad news. Okay. The good news is yes. After listening to this podcast, you know what emotional intelligence is and what it means to practice it. You, I hope, are starting to connect the dots to say this is important in my leadership, important in my business, important in how I'm going to create value. You're going to go, I hope, and try this process right now. It's going to take you maybe a little more than 6 seconds the first few times, but it's not going to take you a long time. You can do it right now. You're ready. What our research shows is it takes about 4 years to really integrate it
into a business. And,
yeah. So we did this. I got really interested in this question of what is the process? And so I asked a whole bunch of people to take a survey and they very generously answered a ridiculously long survey. And then we had some volunteers help us code lots and lots and lots and lots of answers. And with these thousands of comments, we then were able to assess, you know, what are the stages of learning emotional intelligence? And we also asked, how long did that stage take? And it adds up to 3.74 years on average to get to the level where people said, I really feel like I've integrated this.
That's fascinating. And I think I would love to learn more about this. Maybe we can't delve into this for this particular episode, but I would love to learn more about that. That seems a very long time.
Well, I've been working on this for 25 years, and I feel like I'm a slow learner. As I said, I started out with not a lot of skills in this space, and I can see myself getting better. I can feel myself getting better, less volatile, more intentional in my emotions, more able to make space, more able to connect with people, more able to stand in complexity. And yet there's still plenty of days where I'm like, oh, what did I do? Emotional train wreck. Like, so I hope people find it easier than I have, but it does take time to really practice and integrate and and find that equilibrium and agility to be able to move through the complexity. And Rebecca, you mentioned this overwhelm and this complexity. This is makes it harder.
Yeah.
Right. This is not the best of times to be running a business. This is not the best of times to be like having peaceful life in general, right? There's a lot going on. And in that complexity, there's increased pressures, increased demands, increased noise. And it makes it harder for us to kind of slow down and tune into what's important.
I think that's very, very true. I see a lot of that. I experience that myself. And just to put the brakes on for a moment, it feels like you haven't got time to put the brakes on. Which I know as I'm saying it sounds so ridiculous, but yes, well, I can practice this now. You've given me these three steps. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. As we kind of come to wrapping this up, Joshua, and it's been a fascinating insight. I've absolutely loved it. Do you think there are sort of different generational EQ differences that we need to be conscious of as we progress along this pathway of understanding more about it?
We're releasing new findings from the State of the Heart study you mentioned in the introductions, the world's largest study on emotional intelligence, randomized sampling across 140 plus countries. And we're seeing massive shifts in emotional intelligence between 2019 and now. And for reasons that I think are fairly obvious, that the pandemic had some significant disruption in lots and lots of spaces, including emotional spaces, including relational spaces. And the damage from that is actually going to take many years for us to work through. The younger you are, on average, the more problematic this emotional disruption has been. The worse it's affected your well-being, the worse it's affected your connection with others, the worse it's affected your sense of purpose and optimism. And I encourage people to dig into this because I find that this data fascinating to look at gender and role and age and start thinking about at a macro level around the world. We've been in this time of upheaval, and that upheaval is also affecting us internally. Now, as a business leader, what I would say is just in simple terms, if you're in my generation, your experiences have been complicated and messy. And not as damaging as if you're in my kids' generation, for example. And recognizing that your employees who are younger are coming in and they have been traumatized on average. Their emotional strength has been really undermined by these last few years. And so you can be annoyed about that and you can be impatient about that, and that will not help. You can recognize that this has been a brutally difficult situation for billions of people. And hopefully it's only been intensely difficult for you and not brutally difficult for you. If you want to work with people of different genders, of different ages, of different life experiences, one of the first steps is to realize that what they're experiencing might be really different than what you're experiencing. And so recognizing that this effect of these last few years has been profoundly challenging for younger people, and saying, okay, I can't just say, like, suck it up, buttercup, let's move on. If I actually want to engage people to be effective, I'm going to need to get better at my own emotional intelligence so I can support them in this complexity.
That is a very poignant note, I think, on which to end, and makes us think that we have to do this work ourselves if we want to be able to help others. And as leaders, we have a responsibility to do that.
I agree. It's I mean, I love being an entrepreneur, and I love the challenge of this. And I think many of us, you know, when we kind of pause and think about it, we realize that the relational parts of this is what's the hardest and most interesting and the most powerful part of our work. And so I hope we can all keep growing and learning and getting better at it.
Thank you, Joshua. If we have listeners that would love to, I'm sure they will, love to find out more about you, love to learn how to get better at it, love to explore this further, how can they get in touch with you? What's the best place for them to do that? Or for you to share anything else that you'd like to share with us as we close?
Well, like you, I'm quite active on LinkedIn and welcome connections from various and sundry. So please feel free to reach out. 6seconds.org is the website for our organization. And there's scads of resources and articles for business, for education, for parenting, for life. We have lots of case studies. We have a whole library of case studies. If you want to think about what does this actually look like to integrate these processes into a business, large and small. We have a lot of e-learning courses that I can recommend. And we have wonderful programs that we run all over the world, mostly online these days. So you can access them from anywhere. We have a program called Unlocking EQ that we run in about 6 languages several times a month somewhere in the world. And so that's a fantastic way to kind of dive in and taste this and consider, okay, do I want to go further? How do I want to dig in? The other piece, Rebecca, you mentioned having an emotional intelligence assessment. And we publish a fantastic assessment that really gives people a pathway to understand where they are and how to move forward. And so for many, many people, starting with that assessment gives them not only clarity about where they are, but how to start moving forward. And so that would be one of my top recommendations for you, is to take the 6 seconds emotional intelligence assessment and dig in.
I think that's a great idea. And I would encourage everybody who's listening to this to take that assessment, because it starts with us. We have to know where we are and understand what it is we need and how we can improve. Would you agree?
It's I love data, and emotions are data. Emotional intelligence assessments are data, and we can use them in our organizations, and we can start to be able to see the things that we don't normally see. And I think that kind of clarity is where we can really start to grow our capacity in this area
and make a big difference. Thank you, Joshua. It's been delightful to chat with you. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your time and sharing these intriguing insights into emotional intelligence with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. And as always, if you enjoyed it, we welcome a review. And if you have any questions and like to get in touch with us, you can do that at the rjen.co.uk website.